welcome to this month's edition of Our Working Waterfront. Normally with Port Director Aaron Berg and Port Commissioner Pam Petranek, but Aaron's on vacation right now, so Pam's going to give us a little update on what's been happening this month at the Port of Port Townsend.
Happy spring break to our executive director and his five children and their move into their new house this week. So I'm going to take over for Aaron, and we have a lot going on. I'm going to give you probably about the top five that come to my mind. Number one is the jetty. We are almost everything in hand for permits for lining that jetty project up and getting it going out to bid for a contractor. And if we have an acceptable bid that comes in, then we will look at being able to start the in-water work the day after Wooden Boat Festival. And that work would continue through the late fall, winter, to the end of February. And so by mid-March, we would be having the North Jetty finished. And then the following year, we would tag team that same schedule and do the South Jetty. We have received a total of $2.5 million from our state for the jetty project this past year. So we've got great community, county, state, and federal funding coming in for our jetty project. Our second big project that we're working on this year is our Sims Way Gateway project, and we're working with the PUD, the city, and the county for addressing safety and accessibility and enhancing the landscape of the Cotai Lagoon Park, the port's boatyard, and then the PUD undergrounding of power. And the city has a website that has public engagement and project information outlined under their website homepage called Engage PT. Another thing I'm very excited about, our Port Commission started in-person meetings at the Port Townsend Yacht Club throughout April, and then hopefully we will be at the Point Hudson Pavilion building, which is the old Pygmy Kayak building, in May. So please come join us in person. Our next meeting is April 13th. We have a 9:30 workshop and a 1 p.m. business meeting. And again, that's at the Port Townsend Yacht Club. We're doing a lot of community engagement, not only with the Sims Gateway Project, but with the Quilcene community. We're continuing to meet on a monthly basis. Our next meeting for that is May 3rd, and we hope to start doing some planning for budgeting in June. We're also going to be engaging with the Gardner community, looking at the Gardner boat launch ramp, replacing that during the next couple of years. And we received a grant for a pump out boat so that we can take it to all three different marinas and have more easily accessible for boats to pump out. And that was a grant that was started by a moorage tenant here, Jeff Kelty. He led that project and then helped get funding through the Washington State Parks.
I'm not pumped out, Pam, but I'm pumped up because we're going to take a little walk over to the fishing vessel Carolee, and we're going to talk to our special guest for this month. How about we do that?
That would be great.
We're standing here in the boatyard just adjacent to the port offices, just under the stern of the Carolee, and we're going to have a conversation with Joel Kalahara, the skipper of the Carolee. Pam?
Welcome to the north end of the boatyard today on a rare sunny spring day. So Joel, you have been a resident here for a long time.
Well, I moved to Quilcene in 2000 to help with my aging parents' health care. Because my mother has always lived in Quilcene, we've been coming from Seattle, where I grew up, my entire life. So 1955 is when I was born. So yeah, 60 some odd years.
So your mother was living in Quilcene, and how did she end up in Quilcene?
My mother's mother married an Anglo, an American, in whatever that was, the early 19-teens, and they moved to Quilcene without my mother. My mother was actually adopted from my grandmother's sister, which is kind of a funny, complicated story. But anyway, my mother came in about 1920.
You are currently living in Quilcene, where your mother grew up?
Yes, that property has been in the family. Well, I'd be the third generation that's occupying that farm property. It's on Debaugh Bay, and it's known as Lindsay's Beach. My grandfather was Walter Lindsay, who bought the properties, in the early 19-teens.
Growing up in Seattle, you went to some universities there, the University of Washington, and you got a couple of different degrees. Can you tell us what you tried to do using those degrees and where your passions led you?
Well, thank you, Pam. That's such an interesting question. Every geek loves to talk about their education.
I was a teacher, so I do value education, but I value more where it leads you.
So, yeah, I attended the University of Washington. I started out thinking I wanted to be a scientist, so I was taking physics. I graduated with a physics degree and a whole pile of math credits, too. During that time span, my father decided he wanted to try commercial fishing one more time, so I took a couple of years off and started trolling in Alaska with my father. And that, like I said, was just a couple of years. Went back to University of Washington, got an electrical engineering degree, which is much more marketable as a Bachelor of Science, and went to work for a large corporation that builds airplanes in Seattle, but also is involved with a lot of military contracts. And in the space of 5 years, decided that working for people and with people that wanted to blow up the world every day of their working lives was no way to live. So I decided to go back and become a fisherman.
Tell us about this beautiful wooden fishing boat that we're standing next to and how you got to be the owner of it. And where has this adventure led you beyond the corporate world?
Well, the boat has a beautiful history. It was launched in Seattle in 1944, right at the end of World War II. So there are a few interesting construction details with the boat. Like, it doesn't have boat nails, it has wire house nails because of military restrictions on building materials and whatnot. So the boat has had four owners, as far as I know. The first owner had her for 3 or 4 years, and then Roger Bailey, probably the most famous owner, had her from approximately 1950 till 1968. It was then skippered by McVickers. And then Lee Krause in Sitka had her from about 1970 to 1987 when I bought the boat. In the course of the time I've had the boat, I've fished in Alaska and Washington and Oregon and California for salmon and albacore off of Oregon and Washington.
And after fishing a few years, you were awarded a Lifetime Achievement Award from the National Fisherman Magazine as Highliner of the Year.
Well, I have no idea why I was chosen. The activities I was involved with prior to that were a lot of political activities, but also I served for quite a while on the Pacific Fisheries Management Council Habitat Committee and eventually chaired the committee for a couple of cycles. I'm thinking that they liked the fact that I was so politically involved and involved with fish habitat, that's very important, and for salmon in particular, freshwater fish habitat is critically important, and I've spent quite a bit of time since then participating in various venues and meetings and collaborations to try to improve fish habitat, including being on the board of Save Our Wild Salmon, including the Columbia Basin Partnership, which was formed by NOAA in 2017, and currently on the Columbia Basin Collaborative, which is an extension of the Columbia Basin Partnership, to try to implement on the ground a lot of the recovery and restoration projects that have been planned for many years.
When you say freshwater habitat, the Lower Snake River dams, for example, and what it takes in order to make some kind of an effective change there to help preserve the salmon.
Actually, that's an interesting thing about the Columbia River Collaborative. Our first meeting, the organizers, the states of Washington, Oregon, Montana, and Idaho, kind of ground ruled out initial discussion of removing the Snake River Dam because of the large political lift it would take, and in addition because Governor Inslee and Senator Murray from Washington State are both conducting studies and investigations as how to accomplish the kinds of mitigations and recovery efforts for non-fish related complications or implications to the dam removal, which are some of the weightier issues, how to keep non-fishing stakeholders whole in the Columbia Basin who depend on services currently provided by the Snake River dams. So that's one of the kinds of things that Murray and Inslee's study is looking at. We can recover the salmon as well as preserve or improve the economy of the basin. And that's kind of, in a nutshell, what the Columbia Basin Collaborative and the Columbia Basin Partnership were about, is getting people together so we can actually talk about those without fear of political implications.
Let's move out to the coastal waters and give us some perspective on that. All of this involves people like you that are a catalyst for discussion to bringing people together. What's been your experience over the years in the coastal waters and your fishing endeavors?
It's interesting to have observed the Washington coast since the middle 1970s. One can definitely see the pattern due to climate change. There are different kinds of ocean currents and upwellings that are occurring now than had occurred in the 1970s. For instance, in 2021, last year, on the north coast, there was consistent hypoxic upwelling all summer. No oceanographers have charted all of that, but we couldn't catch any fish in that. And back in the day, that would happen for a week or two. Fish would go away, you'd go and grumble, and then go back out and you could find some fish. The watercolor, when it's hypoxic, it's very noticeable. It's dark and very cold. Salmon water generally is sort of pea green because of the chlorophyll. The phytoplankton are very active, and the phytoplankton provide oxygen. The fish love the oxygen. The fish love the little fish that are eating the phytoplankton. So it's a great scene, but that didn't happen all last year because of that extreme upwelling. And that's a condition I've not witnessed before. And I think, again, the NOAA oceanographers were saying it was an extreme event. Blaming that on climate change, cliff mass would flip out and say, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. But we are also seeing that right on the heels of the ocean heat waves in 2014 and 2015. So, you know, salmon and other things in the ocean are taking a battering because of that. Fortunately, they're resilient, but they do need normal conditions eventually to kind of get their fin back beneath them.
I did work in habitat preservation along the coast with the rockfish.
Actually, that was the Habitat Committee, and that was more led by the NOAA Science Centers. In the early 2000s, rockfish stocks along the Pacific coast, coastwide on the Pacific, were in rather dire straits. And NOAA's Fisheries Science Center did extensive surveys of rockfish habitat and the correlation between habitat and rockfish. The results of that were the designation of essential fish habitat for rockfish. I don't remember the statistics on how much of the ocean is currently still closed to bottom contact gear, which means not only trawl gear, but there are some longline gears where they are closed.
I'm going to interrupt you for a minute, because when you say trawl, I just want to make sure that our listeners understand the difference between troll, T-R-O-L-L, and trawl, T-R-A-W-L. Can you explain that?
Trolling consists of dragging lures around in the ocean. Most people have sports fish, and so it's a commercial industrial version of that. And then trawling with an A is where you drag a net behind the boat, and those nets can be dropped to the bottom in the ocean. And that's the damage that was occurring for rockfish, was their habitat was being disrupted and destroyed by nets grinding over primarily coral, but also other features on the ocean floor. The essential fish habitat strove to protect the rocky areas around the Pacific so that rockfish had their habitat where they breed and rear. And also recently deep sea coral up to 1,000 fathoms, maybe 500 fathoms has been protected in a lot of places. And there's also another category of there's methane seeps and methane beds of frozen methane down off of Oregon that have been protected. And those are just fascinating and kind of unique. Well, they're unique to me.
Leads me to think about what not only discussions between the fishing industry and the rural economy and the salmon preservationists and the rural economy and trying to find a balance there, but also finding balances within the fishing industry.
Yeah, in the case of the groundfish, fewer people are now participating in the rockfish fishery. The industry's been consolidated to fewer boats because of economic stresses that came from closing areas and also from deliberate economic planning by the Pacific Fisheries Management Council about how many people could fish on whatever stocks were left and how to make that feasible, economical, and doable for people. And so the groundfish fishery on the West Coast has gone through some of the most striking socioeconomic changes in the last 25 years to the benefit of the sustainability of the stock.
There's a lot of work going on back to the Snake River dams, and there's an event coming up this Friday at Finn River. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how folks can connect with that?
Save Our Wild Salmon is having a benefit night at Finn River, and it starts at 4 or 5 o'clock and lasts till 8 o'clock, so I think it starts at 4 o'clock. Obviously, Finn River is the host. The Save Our Wild Salmon representative will be Amy Grondin, who in her own right is a fisher. She will be there, and I'll try to show up after work is done on this poor old boat.
Well, we only have a couple of minutes left, Joel, but I'm thinking, as we stand underneath the stern of the Carol Lee, what do you see the future being for your relationship with you and the Carol Lee?
The immediate future is more work. I would hope that the maintenance work that we're able to accomplish in Port Townsend allows this boat to have a career that exceeds me. I am 66 years old, so I'm not sure I have over 5 or 6 years of fishing that I can continue doing, but I'm pretty hopeful that the boat can serve, you know, 20 or 30 more years, thanks to the work that I've been able to get done, the help that I've been able to get from the guys here in the yard. The boat's in fair shape, and we have plans to continue to replace and restore and make better, and we'll keep doing that.
What encouraging words would you give to the 20-some-year-olds who are now looking at trying to figure out what they want to do for a lifetime or for a short time? How did you engage in following your passion, and what would you advise to them?
Good heavens. I'm terrible with 20-year-old guys. Pam, I'm sorry.
Oh, I have 3 20-some-year-olds. So what would you say to my kids? Because I am taking one of them fishing up to Alaska, joining us for the first time this year. And we're taking another 20-some-year-old fishing for the first time this year. What would you say to them to encourage them? Well, they're pretty excited. They think it's going to be a grand adventure.
The beautiful thing about being a fisherman is not that you're your own boss. Your boss is always a jerk. That's inevitable. But you are experiencing a part of the world that, unfortunately, the rest of society, especially American society, has disdained and has trod over and done their best to try to extinguish. The work that you do is not just work. Fishing requires that you immerse yourself in nature for you to be a successful fisherman. You have to know what the fish want. You have to know what the weather wants you to not do. You have to know your cohorts. You have to be neighborly with your friend, fellow fishers. All of these are skills that you don't necessarily use in normal society and normal jobs. But the most important and encouraging thing is your relationship with nature and how you become much more aware of what nature requires of you as a human being to participate in this world.
Joel Kawahara, thank you so much, skipper of the Carol Lee.
Thank you, Joel. It's always good to connect with you.
Thank you. This was a great way to spend a sunny day in the north end of the yard.